There's a lot of things in this old world that just do not make sense. Like why there's so few believers on the firing line, while so many others sit the fence. But if you want to know where the Word of God stands, and believe it wants to use your feet and hands, it's time to take your faith out of the seats and into the streets, and come along with me. If you'll only look, then you will see on WCN TV.
Well, hello there, and welcome to WCN-TV. It is Tuesday, May 26, 2026. Living in the future. Well, it's no secret that Satan is targeting our children. He's always targeted the most innocent and vulnerable among us. And while he's not omniscient, he does observe us closely. So he and his demons know how to best lure us away from God and into temptation and sin. He also loves to twist God's natural order and design into something dark, evil, destructive, and addictive. And so one of his most useful tools is perverting God's design for natural human intimacy and love. That's something that we're all naturally wired to yearn for, something that bonds us to our mates in what should be a lifetime of holy matrimony. But Satan changes it into a cheap, filthy, and perverted artificial imitation, where there is no love, only lustful self-indulgence. Those involved in pornography and sexual addictions often justify their behaviors by telling themselves that it doesn't hurt anyone. It's a victimless crime. Even Christians who use porn tell themselves it's a harmless sin that God will understand or overlook because, after all, sexual desire is natural. You know, Satan only has a handful of tools to use, but those tools in demonic hands can be very versatile and adapted to almost any situation. And here we have one of his most common tricks, a pinch of truth in a gallon of lies. Yes, sexual desire is normal, natural, healthy, and beautiful within marriage. But in any other setting, it becomes an ugly cancer and a festering boil that destroys people from the inside out. It is not a victimless crime or a harmless sin. Porn kills, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. It's the seed that grows into weeds of prostitution, rape or child abuse, human trafficking, gender dysphoria, homosexuality, and more. What God meant for our good, Satan twists to ensnare us, and many, once caught in this trap, never get free. Our guest today is a man who did get free. Lynn Frederick is here with us. Lynn's the author of Stand Firm, which is a book that chronicles his journey from the hell of pornography addiction to a life of freedom in Christ by God's mercy and grace. He's also a monthly writer for Wisconsin Christian News, a conference speaker and counselor, and recently he's been able to speak to prison inmates, many of whom are in prison in the first place because of their use of pornography. We're going to be getting into all these topics and more today on the program. But Lynn, welcome to WCN-TV. Thanks for taking the time after your long trip.
I feel very privileged to be here. Thank you.
You know, it's been about a year and a half. That's too long. I need to invite you back more often. So anyway, as I was saying to Lynn before the show, I'm going to do things a little differently today in that I don't have a long list of questions. I'm gonna just give Lynn the floor to tell his story and share his presentation. And I'll jump in here and there with questions and comments. And you, too, can also ask questions and make comments. I will give you plenty of opportunities for that. So, Lynn, why don't we start by having you give your testimony, give your history, and tell us how God saved you from this addiction. And then we could talk about the situations that people are dealing with in the world today, and also your ministry work.
Okay, I'll give you a little brief of my own history with pornography and being set free from that. I want to talk about some of the things you said. I'm going to talk about a few people that I know who are in prison, incarcerated. You know, you can trace back the reason for that incarceration to pornography. And some of them, one of them is a lifetime offense, and it's pornography is a cause. And we're going to talk about, well, where does that all start and how does that happen? And it starts very young. It's going on at a very young age today, and it's continued and carried on into the church, where the majority now in Christian churches are in one way or another consuming pornography on a regular basis, which would be at least monthly. So we're going to try to cover all of those things of where does this start, you know, how where can it go, and where does it start, and how can the church address those issues today, and are they willing to address those issues? For myself, my addiction started at a very young age as well, when I was exposed to pornography at probably 8 years old. And I was also in a situation of physical abuse. And I would comfort myself by viewing pornography. And that just festered and festered through my life and caused my thinking to be very, very dysfunctional. I was being educated by pornography, and an education in pornography is not conducive to being able to maintain relationships, not only relationships as far as marriage, but relationships in general with anyone. And eventually it consumed my ability to be able to do that. And my life crumbled, and I really had no choice but to seek help, which I did. I went to recovery groups for at least 11 years. I also engaged with one of a world-renowned, and that's a God thing, world-renowned sexual addiction counselor by the name of Mark Laser. We spent 7 years together, and that 7 years was a process of reprogramming my brain and reprogramming the way that I think. And I no longer think on the education of pornography, but my thinking is more based upon God's word and how God views sexuality and how God views men and women. And I am my addiction lasted for 28 years. At the 5-year mark, and most people get pins every month for having sobriety. I quit taking pins at the 5-year mark because I didn't feel I really deserved that pin. The one that's delivered me from pornography is the power of God through Jesus Christ and the Holy Spirit. So I started giving the pins to God, and this coming July, God will get his 33-year pin.
So Lynn, You said you were first exposed at 8 years old.
Yep.
And your addiction continued for 28 years. Yep. What? I don't want to give away your age, but what time frame? What years are we talking?
It was 1993 when I entered recovery, and I was I think around 30 years old. I'm 71 years old now. So it was about late 20s, approximately when I entered that. So 10, 28 years, 38. So I was 38 years old.
So basically through the 1980s, 70s, 80s.
Yes.
Do you think you were unique, or were there a lot of other guys dealing with the same thing that you were dealing with?
I thought I was unique. I thought I was the only one, especially I was a Christian. And I thought, I'm the only one who's got this problem. And I didn't learn that I was, until I made a phone call to a secret organization called the Augustine Fellowship. Didn't even know who they were. Turned out to be Sex and Love Addicts Anonymous. And for the first time in my life, I found out that I was not alone, that other people were struggling with the same thing. And then I joined a local organization called Sex Addicts Anonymous, and found out I certainly wasn't alone. And through the years, I have met many, many, many people who are face this issue. And with all of them, they think they're the only one. They don't, and that is a lie of Satan that he puts in people's heads, that they're the only one. And if anybody ever finds out, they're going to lose their standing in the community and in their church. So they stay silent. And as long as they stay silent, Satan wins the battle. So you got to break the secret, and you'll find out that you're not alone. And then you can get support to be able to stand against the schemes of the evil one. So I think, you know, what's developed, you know, through the years, you know, I've been speaking about this, writing about it for many years, for 10 years at least. I've been writing for Wisconsin Christian News. I've been speaking at events at churches, some churches and some organizations. And so I've been in that process, especially through Wisconsin Christian News. There are inmates that pick up that paper. Sometimes their family will send that paper to them. Sometimes the paper ends up in the prison because it's free. And I will end up developing relationships with men who are in prison. They will reach out to me, ask me questions, and eventually a writing relationship will develop. It's a writing mentoring relationship through correspondence. One of those relationships has lasted, you know, over 30 years. That person is no longer in prison, and he was released to the community in which I live in, and we have become very good friends. So that is a monstrous success story. I am currently, the longest rating relationship I have with someone in prison is 8 years. The rest of them, right now I have 4 relationships going on all at the same time, and it's almost too many, because it can be a lot of writing, but it's how God dictates it. I don't solicit these guys. They reach out to me, and I feel like every single one of them has been placed in my life by the action of God. But I just want a couple of these. So the stories I'm going to tell you are all people that I know. And then I'm going to come back to, well, how does this happen? I'm going to concentrate a little bit more on one prisoner, but briefly on two others. One is a 19-year-old, just graduated from high school, and he was sentenced to 7 years in federal prison. And it's like, okay, 19 years old, 7 years in prison. Well, what did he have? Well, he had nude pictures on his cell phone of his girlfriend. His girlfriend was 16 years old. They had a little spat. So she told on him. And when the police looked at his phone, yep, sure enough, nude pictures of a 16-year-old. That's possession of child pornography. And he went to prison for 7 years for the possession of child pornography. And he will carry the tag of sex offender when he gets out. And the tag of sex offender is a tough tag. It's really not a good one, in my opinion, that the Department of Corrections has put on people. Because in his case, he had nude pictures of his girlfriend, sex offender. Most people, when they hear the term sex offender, they think of the worst of the worst. And I'm going to tell you a story about one of the worst of the worst. But no matter what offense you commit and get sex offender, they all end up with that same tag. Another is a 33-year-old man who he is much older than that right now. He's one that I've written to for the last 8 or 9 years at least. He wanted to act out a porn video that he'd seen, and he was wanting more and more excitement. He was married, he had children, but he found himself in a bar trying to solicit two women that would want to have a threesome. And there was two jealous men that heard the conversations going on, and went to chase him out of the bar, and he ran, of course. And when they got outside, there was some gunfire. He happened to have a gun as well. He shot back. He hit one of the men in a femoral artery as he took off in his car. The man hit in the leg, died within minutes. That's a major artery, and he bled to death within 10 minutes. So he went to prison for manslaughter for 37 years. All because, and he told me, he said, you know, Lynn, there's not a day that goes by that I don't think about the fact if pornography had not been in my life, I would have never been in that bar. I would have been home with my family. And he's been there. He's been in there for over 30 years. And I had the privilege to be able to meet him in person when I spoke at Jackson Correctional Institution a couple months ago. So anyway, that pornography destroyed his life without a doubt. The more recent one, and it's one, Rob, is a man that reached out to numerous ministries, some of them national ministries, and with no response from them. And all he wanted to do is tell his story, the story of redemption of a man who most of society would view as reprobate. I mean, that God would want nothing to do with him. Then I'm going to tell a little bit of his story, because Rob, you got that letter from this man, and you forwarded the letter to me, and I'm grateful that you did. He committed crimes that were extremely despicable against women and children. I mean, molestations of children and rape, everything short of murder. He was absolutely brutal. And he believed that he was beyond salvation, that God would want nothing ever to do with him. And he didn't care. He was born to a 17-year-old alcoholic mother and a father who went to prison 2 months before he was born. Grandma tried to raise him. He was stolen by his birth father's brother and carted hundreds of miles away from where his grandmother was, and he was told that his grandmother did not want him anymore, didn't want anything to do with him, which crushed him. I mean, he was only several years old at this point, only like 2 years old. And at this new family where he went to, they didn't really want anything to do with him either. They used him as a whipping boy for nearly 4 years, where he was beaten and abused every day of his life. Until they tired of beating on him, they carted him up to Health and Human Services and dropped him on the doorstep and left him. And he was put in foster care for 6 months until he was adopted by incredible couple, husband and wife with a hobby farm, and with some experience in dealing with a child that would be in his position of abuse. He described himself at this point as being neurotic, nail-biting, bedwetting child with night terrors and debilitating fear of the dark. That's was how he described himself when he was adopted. And he went into that adoption in complete rebellion. He hated everybody. But the love of his new mom and the church that they attended and the love they demonstrated to him, it took about 2 years and they won. He finally believed that he was loved and cared for by someone. And he settled into what he thought would be what was normal for the first time in his life. But even when he was 12 years old at church camp, he gave his life to Jesus and was baptized. And he felt that this is the life I want to live for the rest of my life. His mom got breast cancer. And the elders came to the church or came to his home. They laid hands on his mom. They anointed her with olive oil, and they promised that God would deliver her and heal her from this cancer. And when she died, he viewed God as a liar, that his word was couldn't be trusted, and he hated God. And at the age of 13, he prayed to Satan, and he gave his life to Satan, said that he would serve him, and from then on, he would have no thought for anyone other than his own pleasure, and that's what he would do for the rest of his life. And if he went to hell for it, he didn't care. He was fine with that. He believed he would spend eternity in hell. He had a brief marriage before it ended in divorce in his 20s. He fathered several children. That marriage ended. He had a relationship with another woman who had a child. That child became another one of his victims. So at 33 years old, he went to prison for his crimes of abusing women, for rape, for child molestation. And he was fine that he would just live out his life there, and when he died, he'd go to hell. But something, he's 69 years old now, and 2 years ago, when he was put into a van to go for a medical treatment at a facility some miles away from the prison where he is at, he was handcuffed and shackled and laid in the back open end of this vehicle. And it occurred to him that if they would have an accident on the way to that medical facility, he'd never survive. He had no seatbelt, no restraints. I mean, he was going to die. And that overwhelmed him that this is going to happen. And he said it was as though this just pressure came onto him, and it was like someone was shaking him to the core and asking him, are you sure this is what you want? If you die today, are you sure you want to go to hell? And it broke him. He remembered his childhood, and he remembers asking Jesus to be his Savior. He remembered his baptism, and he remembered those years with his mother that loved him. And he broke and cried and wept. He said, I wept and sobbed so I could hardly breathe, begging and asking God to forgive me for the way I had conducted my life. He had kind of a warm feeling that came over him, and he started to weep. He believed that God had forgiven him. That was 2 years ago. It was a good thing that his roommate during that time was a believer in Jesus. He talked to this man every day about the love of God and the love of Jesus, that he would forgive him if he'd ask. And he encouraged him every day and prayed for him, even prayed aloud for him. And he'd play Christian music on his radio. And one of the programs I know that he would turn on and he would have to listen to was one of the programs on VCY. So, which was good. But he said it got to the point all I wanted to do was beat my roommate up. I had sick of it. But the day when he needed that, it was all a good attributing to his believing roommate in that prison. Because now those two study the Bible together. Those two read the New Testament together every morning. They pray together every morning. In the afternoon, they read the Old Testament. They have been through the New Testament 4 times, the Old Testament several times. And they are engaged in a Bible study and are currently looking for a man who would go into the facility and conduct a weekly Bible study for them. So he has gone from believing that he didn't care, that he would spend life and eternity in hell, to being set free. And he has a message to share. He wants to share this message, and it's never been shared outside of prison walls. And that's all he wanted, is my message to be shared outside the walls of a prison with other people. So the listeners today, I want you to hear this message.
I know who you're talking about, and he does write to me also, but he's never told me his whole story. So okay. I'm thankful that you're here to do that.
Yeah, and that his story
it always made me wonder how in the world you end up being in prison for life for this.
For rape and for child molestation, that's not uncommon. Okay. And it doesn't matter how you ended up there, you know, how it started and why you thought that way. It's very, very difficult to get out of prison. The prison that he is in currently was started in 1969, is specifically for sex offenders at a level where he is at. They say that if by the people who run the facility think that you would be safe for society and the treatment is successful, then you could be released. Currently in Minnesota, and that's where this facility is, there are 400 men in this in a treatment in two different facilities. The program started in 1969. Since 1969, there has only been one person released. So what they're really saying is that you're never getting out of here. You're going to stay here. It's very rare that one in 400 so far has been released back out into society. But his message to share is that, and I quote, "If God can forgive someone as vile and degenerate as me, and restore me to a right relationship with him by transforming me to his likeness, he can forgive, restore, and transform anyone. So if you need forgiveness, ask. God will forgive you. He will restore that relationship. You have not gone too far to be helped." So the question for me is, you know, How does this happen? How does a person get to the point of not even caring?
Before we get to that section, Lynn, anyone in the audience, questions or comments? Anyone want to weigh in? David.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, like, and most of them do believe that they're unsalvageable. I'm blessed to be able to go in and speak with some of the sex offender groups that I am. And sadly, they are being told that they cannot change by their counselors, that once a sexual deviant or once a pedophile, always a pedophile, once a rapist, always a rapist. And that's just not the truth. You should see the spark in their eyes and the joy come in their face when you tell them that they can be delivered from that deviant spirit, from that legion of deviance and just perversion. You should see how they come alive when you tell them that they can be, you know. And I was also in touch with, last year I was in touch with a principal who was arrested for child pornography. He was a pillar of his community, a deacon of the church, a husband, a father, and according to everyone that knew him, even though he admitted to actually engaging in activity with one of his students, a young boy, even though he admitted that, the people that knew him still could not believe that he did it. And so when I reached out to him and we got to talk, we've had hours long conversations, and he was perverted by sexualized materials and then pornography. And then he stumbled and he actually engaged with, he molested one of his students. And the student had previously been molested because of the actions of and the things that took place. But I mean, he was only arrested for child pornography. He admitted to engaging in activity with one of his students, which got him actually put into the federal prison. But, you know, these people are being perverted with sexual materials, with pornography. Those who were victims, even though they love to say that most victims don't victimize, there's a great number of victims that do re-victimize others. A great number of them. Almost every single one that I know who has victimized either a child or others has been victimized severely. So I just thought I'd toss that in there, and thank you, Lynn, for all that you do.
It's at the core of the whole thing. It's doomed to fail. The Department of Corrections and there has developed a program for it's called sex offender treatment, and the sex offender treatment program is shame based, and promotes the lingering of shame in the person who has committed the offense. But the addiction that they have is also shame-based. So it's not helping them to get away from shame, rather keeping them in shame. And it will never work. There are men that I know that are on the outside where it's a treatment, a sex offender will be sent to them by the Department of Corrections through judicial order. And the Department of Corrections will talk to that counselor, and they have to report anything that would be a violation of parole. And so it breaks the patient counselor privilege to one that they can't be, it just doesn't work. And these guys say you can't do shame-based counseling and ever have it work. But that's what the Department of Corrections wants. But it won't work. So I know two counselors up here that counsel on the side and will counsel sex offenders, but they're not doing it under the jurisdiction of the judicial system or the Department of Corrections. And that's very rare. I mean, the questions come from the prisons themselves, from prison chaplains of what can we do to help sex offenders once they're released. And that is a very, very difficult question. It's if they stay in the Department of Corrections system, chances are very high that they're just going to go back into the prison again. So I think there is an answer, though. And I think the answer has to come from the church. And where this begins, you know, we talked about, you know, Satan is after our children, Robin. I'm glad you said that, because the role of the church in this is like non-existent, right? In my opinion, it's nearly non-existent. But the role of the church should be to educate adults, to educate parents and children on the dangers and the harm caused by pornography. There's all kinds of sexual immorality and brokenness that fall underneath this, from abortion, adultery, child pornography, fornication, pedophilia, pornography, sexual abuse, sexual exploitation, sexual identity, sex trafficking. All these issues should be being addressed by the church, not just from the pulpit, but should be being addressed through educational programs that begin in the elementary age, in the junior high age, the high school age, and in the adult age. And it's not happening. And here's why it should happen. Among our children right now, children under the age of 10, I'm going to read this slow because I don't want it to go over anybody's head. Under the age of 10, account for 22% of the online porn consumption by those under the age of 18. 22% are under the age of 10. 10 to 14-year-olds account for 36% of the minor consumption of porn. So you put them together, if you're 14 and under, you're accounting for 58% of the porn consumption by that age group on the internet. And what are they watching? This comes from the director of what's called Enough is Enough. And years ago, it used to be a campaign against pornography. Enough Enough has been around since 1994, doing statistics and fighting a battle against pornography. Right now, pornography, current pornography, is what these kids, when they go on and they're watching. They're watching torture, incest, group sex, bestiality, choking, excretion. These are all among the acts of common and obscenity today. This is a quote from the director of Enough is Enough. Extreme pornography has become the de facto sex educator of many children, conditioning them into believing that violence, degradation, and humiliation are all forms of acceptable sexual experience. So by the time kids are in high school, they think that these things they're seeing on porn are normal. That's supposed to be going on. And you have kids that are doing sexting today. I used to think, well, that's that would be not many people are doing that, but it rose by 183% during the COVID lockdown. So you got 1 in 5 girls and 1 in 10 boys agree that they share nudes with each other all the time, and 40% of those that are doing it think that that's absolutely normal. There's nothing wrong with doing that. It's normal for kids to be sharing nudes with each other.
Lynn, we had a question in the comments. Are the statistics similar for boys and girls?
Right now, among the girls, you got 1 in 4 girls and 1 in 13 boys will experience child sexual abuse at some point in their childhood. But if you have,
I'm talking about pornography use and
pornography use, it's higher among boys, but it's raising. It's just like with adults, 75% of men, church going men, are watching porn. 40% of church going women are watching porn. I believe among the high school age, it's like 87% of the boys and 77% of the girls. The girls are a little bit behind, but they're catching up. And for whatever reason. But
our public school system is endorsing this and pushing it on the kids as well. And meanwhile, our church is saying nothing about it.
Correct. And we need that needs to change. Right now, the sexual the imagery on 1/3 of the web pages featuring sexual image of children, 1/3 are self-generated. The kids are uploading their own pictures to those sites on the internet. It's more than 3/4 of that self-generated material, whether it's images or videos, feature 11 to 13-year-old children, and the majority of those are girls. More girls are sending their images to the internet than boys are. But it's no wonder that during that time period, during the COVID time period, there were 21.7 million reports of suspected child sexual exploitation. The kids are putting their own pictures on the internet. They're uploading them to websites. And who's looking for them? Pedophiles, pimps. Child exploitation is skyrocketing because they're publishing themselves. And they think it's normal to publicize themselves on the internet naked. And where's the church? The church needs to be educating these kids that that's not normal, but they right now they think it's normal. Porn is the educator, and the church is doing nothing. And I, frankly, am upset because I go to speak at different churches, sometimes not many churches. Thank you, Rob, for giving me the medium to speak today with you, to be able to come to some of your conferences and speak. But very few churches invite me to speak. At your conferences, I will give out hundreds of brochures on what I talk about. People will come and take hundreds of my cards, and people will say, not hundreds, but many, we're going to have you come to our church. We're going to go home, and we're going to talk to our pastor and our elders, and we're going to have you come. You need to come and talk to our church. You know how many in the last 8 years, Rob, that have contacted me out of those people? None. Not a one.
That's because pastor said no.
It's, well, it's what I believe is happening is those people go home, they hand that information to their pastor, they talk to their pastor about it, and as soon as they walk out of the office, it goes into the round file.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I can think of all kinds of reasons, but I don't know if I'm right. They could have an issue themselves. They just don't want to address the issue. But that someone has to. I have one church that has invited me for several years. They have two campuses. They invite me every year to address the issue of pornography and the destruction it causes to relationships. That's only one church. More churches should be doing that. Yeah. But they're not. They're allowing Satan to win. 30 years ago, porn was influencing 23% of the men who went to Promise Keepers. So the stadiums filled, hundreds of thousands of men, and did the survey, 23% were struggling with porn. I think the women's were somewhere, you know, around 8%. Now it's 75% and 40%. We're losing the battle. And how can I scream louder to a church? You can sit there and do nothing, but we're losing the battle. Satan is winning. And the only way this is ever going to stop is if we take the fight to Satan and educate our churches and our children of what's happening through pornography.
Yeah, well,
and if we don't, Satan's going to win. And more lives will be destroyed. More and more people will end up in prison. More and more marriages will dissolve. More and more children will be exploited.
Cupcakes after Sunday school and pizza parties on Friday nights for the teens is not going to combat what they're getting all week long. Basically 24 hours a day, everywhere they go. David, come on back in.
I just wanted to say, you know, Lynn, you really touched on something important there, is why aren't they asking you to come? I've been able to see why they're not asking to come, but a very good friend of mine, she's went on to glory, Dr. Judith Reisman, she once told me that those that are saturated in perversion are less likely to stand up against perversion, even when it's coming for their children. And so that also entails to why won't they have you come in and speak? Because what you speak on may expose something that they're guilty of, or they may find guilt, right? Guilty people always think the spotlight is on them. And so that's a big, big part of it, because a lot of them are guilty of perversion and they too need deliverance.
That's correct. I mean, it depends on where you look for the statistics. You know, 35% of pastors struggle with pornography. There can be ones that are higher, more in the 60-some percent. Or if they have struggled in the past, or they're not currently struggling, but some of them still are. So, yeah, the statistics are there that say pastors are exposing themselves to porn. And that creates a reluctance.
Exactly. And let me just say, I know, like, for a fact, right? Personal life knowledge and experience. One of the first churches that I spoke at, I stood up to speak and give my testimony, and a man sat down in front of me, and he didn't know who I was, but I knew who he was. And then I knew when they put the pictures of the old me on the screen behind me, because he turned quite a few different shades of quite a few different colors. And he started sweating and he got up and he paced in the back of the congregation because he was one of my, he was a deacon in that church with a family. And he was one of my clients when I was a trans prostitute. I knew him. He didn't know me until they showed the pictures of the old me. That's when he knew who I was. And so it shows you that it is very prevalent in the church. It is very, very, very real. And it's in the church.
Correct.
Betty.
Well, my question is, along with the pastors, is where are the parents? You know, too many parents now, they have to work. And then when they work, they're tired. So let's just give the kid an iPad or a computer at the age of 5 and let them do whatever they want. They don't monitor nothing. And then they wonder why the children do what they do. And unless they're doing it also, then they don't care.
Well, that's what I was going to say, is that the parents are probably also involved.
Yes. And a lot of pastors, what I had read is like 65% of the pastors are into pornography. They'll never admit it, and that's probably why they don't speak it.
Those statistics are all true. But how do you break through? You know, if there's a pastor out there listening, please tell us what you're doing in your church. You know, let me know, because right now I don't think anybody's doing anything, and I'm screaming and hollering for nothing, and I'm going to watch the church sink like the Titanic. And it's already kind of got some holes in it.
What you're doing, Lynn, is not for nothing. You may be getting nowhere in churches, just like Wisconsin Christian News gets nowhere in churches. But we have an impact in prisons, and so do you.
Right, and that's, you know, that's, you know, for me.
And out in the general public, you know.
Yep. And then the prison has been a wonderful experience for me, you know, to talk to 50 guys at once. And yeah, it was amazing. The questions that they asked were very pertinent. I've never been around anybody as hungry for hope found in Jesus Christ than those guys. And I would... You know, I see that that's where I'd rather be, you know, but at the same time, I'm not going to give up. You know, I'm not going to give up. I think some of the research of enough is enough. And I'm going to mention them again, lots of statistics on enough is enough. If you're a churchgoer and you want to start something in your own church, all kinds of educational materials for the church right on the enough.org website. And you can just go to resources and materials, and their resources and materials for educating on pornography and all of the sexual dysfunctional issues are all Bible-based. Lots of scripture, lots of solidity in their organization. Just go on there. And look them up and get the information and start. I mean, you don't have to have me come. You can do it yourself. If your pastor doesn't want to do it, and you're a churchgoer, and you're a deacon or an elder, and you want to do it, go on there, that information, and do it. You don't have to wait for your pastor. Start doing something yourself. But somebody in every church has to start to do something. We can't just let Satan win without a battle.
Trouble is, every church has a gatekeeper. That's why Wisconsin Christian News can't get into a church to save our lives. But they sure are hungry for it out in the public. So
yeah, yep. And that's
like you said, we the minute we even when we have pastors smiling ear to ear, oh, we just love your newspaper. We're so thankful that you bring it in. And the minute we walk out the door, it goes right in the trash. So
that's too bad. Unfortunate.
I could tell you a story about that, but I won't. This is your time.
Well, like I said, I've developed some really good relationships with men in prison. And that's something that I will do all my life till I have breath. I don't have breath. I enjoy writing to men. I enjoy going into the prison. Right now, I'm trying to network, you know, with some others that may be able to do that in prisons where they're too far away. I mean, it's a 3-hour drive one way is too far to do a monthly Bible study group. But through networking, it may be possible. And again, it's kind of a roundabout the church, where I know some really wonderful people that are in the treatment facilities for drug and alcohol, and they're doing it privately, but it is all done through, it's Bible-based and Christian-based recovery, and very, very successful. And through them, I may be able to get close enough to where this prison is in Minnesota, to be able to have someone be able to go in and do that Bible study for these guys who are just begging to be taught more about Jesus Christ. So.
Yeah. Tell us, Lynn, I mean, aside from the pornography aspect of things, tell us what parents can do to safeguard their children from child sex trafficking, because there's a lot of grooming going on.
There is,
and they're not grooming the adults; they're grooming the kids.
Correct, correct. They are, and it's. I mean, I could go there. Just this weekend, I learned of a deacon that's grooming his own daughter, and she finally told, and he has been sexually molesting her for several years, and upstanding man in the church. But you know, so it's that grooming can happen right inside your own household. But I think outside of the household, the very first thing that parents need to do is I would say in all events, you know, don't give your kids a normal cell phone. Flip phone's all they need. They need to call home for a ride. Or call someone for a ride, a flip phone works just fine. If you have to have a phone that connects to the internet, go on inside that phone and turn on the parental control. See, most of those phones can have porn access turned off, so they can access certain places. Turn it off and don't give the kid the password. The other thing that you can do is there's Covenant Eyes and Canopy that you can put on those cell phones. I recommend Canopy because Canopy will block out 99.9% of all porn sites. And anything that pops up that would be sexually suggestive will be, all flesh tones will be blurred out. So it's a very good program to have. If you have to have a cell phone that has internet access, you need to protect yourself by putting those programs on it. And what guys that I deal with that need to have internet, I tell them, don't put that program on yourself. You have your wife put that program on your phone, or your pastor, or anybody but yourself. Say they have the password and you don't. Because I know an elder in a church that put it on his cell phone, and within 2 months, they said, how's that going? Well, I couldn't watch certain things, so I took it off. Yeah. Well, what good's the program? You just took it off.
Right.
And so don't have someone else know the password and you don't know the password. Burn the bridge so you can't have access to pornography on your device, on your laptop, on your cell phones. Burn the bridge so you can't access it. Would be the biggest
David
thing that parents can do.
David has some more information for us.
Yeah, just say look at radiantmobile.com. It's something that we're going to be using in the discipleship program here for the guys coming out of prison and county jail. And so Radiant Mobile is a Christian mobile network, and they block all porn. There is no way around that. They also block all LGBTQ trans queer content. And so it's a beginning, and it's better than paying on top of your cell phone bill, paying for a subscription to like Covenant Eyes or something like that. But it's radiantmobile.com, and it's It's a Christian mobile network. And so just I toss that out there because it's very important.
Very important.
And also for parents.
For parents.
Check your kids' phones. Look at their apps. There are a lot of apps that don't belong on the phones. Check out the apps. On my website alone, I'm not trying to take anything from Lynn, but on my website alone, under the resources tab, there's a lot of information about apps. There's even some principal things. And so apps are important. There's actually a calculator app out there that you can, if the parent clicks on it, they use it, it's just a regular calculator. But if the kid puts in a certain code, it holds their hidden files and hidden photographs. Mm-hmm. So it's there's so much out there right now, and you have to stay up on top of that. Sorry.
Okay, oh, no, that's fine. I think video gaming is when you said that parents have to get familiar with apps, they should be familiar with what's on their phone. And they should be familiar with the video games that they're playing, because a lot of porn producers and pimps are playing online videos with the kids. And that's how they solicit a lot of children into sex trafficking, is through video gaming. So the parents need to sit down and play those games and go through it with the child and find out what that game is all about, and find out if it has chat rooms within that game. I'd right away say you don't want your kid to be playing that, because those chat rooms on that game is where you're talking to people, or your children are talking to people, that if you could see them standing outside your patio door, you wouldn't let them in your house. But you're letting them in your house through that video game.
You're letting them in your kid's bedroom. Right. Harry, come on in.
These programs that you can download to block the porn, is that dedicated to a website or is it dedicated to your system? Because if it's dedicated to a web page, you know, you can go to Google or you can go to Chrome or you can go somewhere else and get around it. Unless it's dedicated to your phone completely.
I know that Canopy was developed in Israel, and they brought it to the United States and gave it to high-tech kids on college campuses and says, okay. Now, they had the password installed on the computer, so the kids didn't know the password. They said, try to get around it. No one got around it. It didn't matter if they went to Google Chrome or went to whatever. They could not get around it. So
I think what Harry is asking is it's linked to the device, right? Not a particular search engine. It's linked to the device.
Correct. Your device would be totally protected.
Right. Okay. Well, we're down to about a minute and a half here. Lynn, I'll give you the last word. First of all, Lynn's website is lynnfrederick.com. That's Frederick, Frederick. Don't put an E in the middle where it doesn't belong. LynnFrederick.com. And
we're hoping to have that updated here in the near future. There's been several events I've been at and several different things that should be on there and they're not. So we're going to do some updating on that shortly. So I don't want to give up yet. So I'm going to still keep... Yeah, still keep, you know, and it's kind of like there's a Project Wilberforce that's out there. You can see that on Enough is Enough also. And it's a program, it's a project to get public entities to block porn on their website. All churches should have that blocked at all of their devices. But so far, the only ones that have done it is Starbucks and McDonald's nationwide have blocked all porn on their sites. So if you use free Wi-Fi at any of those sites, you cannot access porn. And they're trying to have that go nationwide to all public entities that they will do that. So children cannot access pornography through a free site. So I think that's a good program.
It sounds like a good program. If they were to start with our public schools, that would be even better, wouldn't it?
Correct. That would be better.
Oh, okay. All right.
If I just real quick, we have one public school here that did that in their school. All their devices are centered to one. If someone goes on to looks at pornography on any of the school devices, the superintendent is notified on his computer. They know exactly the computer in the school where it happened. Mm-hmm. The first one to violate that was the assistant principal. But they caught him. So it can be done in schools.
Yeah.
So we need more schools to do that. You're right, Rob.
This is such a big topic. And there's more that I could say, but we are out of time. So anyway, thank you, Lynn. I appreciate your ministry. Your article in the newspaper is one of my favorites. I've told you that before.
Thank you.
Do typeset every month. So folks, share the program, put it on your social media, help us get the information out. And you guys have a good week. We'll see you next time. God bless.